Another day of government shutdown today, but tomorrow a new Congress will be on Capitol Hill. So how might that change the picture? On Insight, our new year begins with the political junkie Ken Rudin. He shares what he thinks were the top two pivotal political events of 2018, and then we're going to look ahead to what 2019 might bring. Also today, California state-issued IDs now offer more gender options than male or female. I'll talk about this with Pixie Pearl from the Sacramento LGBT Community Center. And from the cast of the touring Broadway production of Waitress, Colby Kindle is here to talk about the special masterclass that he's teaching Friday. You can actually learn choreography from the show. And Waitress continues through January 5th. I'm Beth Ruriak. That's today on this first Insight of 2019. From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is day one of Insight in 2019. I'm Beth Ruriak. Thousands of federal employees in California, Nevada, and across the country, though, are starting this new year caught in the partial government shutdown. Today is day 12 of that, and we're going to start the new year with the political junkie Ken Rudin, because many of us are back from a long holiday break. Although I know, Ken, there was no break in the politics or your work during this holiday season. In any event, Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year to you too, Beth. And of course, politics do not take a break when there's a holiday or a new year. And everybody thinks, well, you know, it's December and nobody's paying attention and nothing is happening. Nothing may be happening with regarding the shutdown of the government, but certainly politics doesn't take a break at all.
On your newsletter, Ken, right after the Christmas holiday, you sent it out with the headline, "Wishing you a happy, healthy, and please, sane new year." So,
yeah, lots of luck with that, right?
That was a really tall order. But what is your broad view right now as we step into 2019, given all that we're in the midst of?
Well, obviously, there's a big change, and we heard this in your newscast just a few seconds ago. I mean, the fact is that starting tomorrow, the Democrats will now take control of the House, thanks to their 40-seat gain in the November elections. Nancy Pelosi becomes Speaker of the House, and no longer will there be united Republican government. No longer will there be any kind of blockings of kind of investigations into Trump alleged misdoings. And when I say Trump, I mean the administration and his campaign. So unlike the Devin Nunes's and the Paul Ryans of the world who basically shrugged their shoulders or were more anxious to focus on Hillary's emails, for goodness sakes, there will be subpoenas and there will be investigations into what the president knew and when he knew it. So that changes absolutely as well.
So let's talk about two factors. Nancy Pelosi and the vote that's going to come tomorrow, her promise that the House is going to pass legislation, at least from the House, to end the government shutdown. I also then want to talk about incoming Utah Senator Mitt Romney and the op-ed that was published in The Washington Post. So let's start with Nancy Pelosi.
Well, once upon a time, if you remember during the campaign of 2018, all the way back in 2018, there was not too few number of Democrats who said that they will make sure not to vote for Pelosi when the Democrats convene in 2019.
That sort of fizzled even before the Christmas holiday, didn't it?
It did. And one of the reasons is because Nancy Pelosi is the ultimate political operative who knows how to count votes, knows how to raise money. And again, she said, look, I don't care if you're conservative or liberal. I don't care if you're pro-Pelosi or anti-Pelosi. The fact is you have a D next to your name, and that's all I care about. So, yes, she did make some concessions. She did raise some of her adversaries to key positions in the new Congress. And, of course, she did agree that she'll put herself on a four-year limit on her leadership. In other words, she will step down in 4 years, of course. The voters may have the Democrats step down for the majority in 2 years. But having said that, given all the fact that she gave up, she is a survivor. And not only is she a survivor, she has to be one of the big winners of 2018, considering the fact that so many people were writing her obituary. And here we are. We're going to see her as being sworn in as Speaker tomorrow. And yes, she will have to wrestle with the two factions of the Democratic Party, the ones that want, you know, impeachment now, and the ones who want, health care for all and Medicare for all and single payer positions for health care, and others who basically still represent some Trump districts where there are more conservative, you know, it's more of a swing districts. And she knows that for them, for these moderate Democrats to win re-election and, you know, succeed and win re-election in 2020, she's going to have to not put a left-wing agenda through that could alienate a lot of voters. So I'd rather be in the majority than the minority, but at the same time, it's going to be some kind of juggling for Nancy Pelosi to keep her new majority focused.
Oh, that may be an understatement. Let me go back to your newsletter, and your phrase was prepare to fasten your seatbelts, because with the way Congress was previously, with Republican control of the presidency and both houses, now we will have the partisanship on display. And wouldn't this be the ultimate test of not only her talents, but anyone who positions themselves as someone who can work across the aisle and create any kind of compromise?
Well, see, that's the thing is, we like to, every time we go into a new Congress and tomorrow starts the 116th Congress, we always like to say that maybe this one will be better, that maybe we'll all agree on infrastructure reform. Maybe we all agree on, lowering the price of prescription drugs. There are some things that both parties ostensibly should agree with, but given the fact that we are now approaching 2020, the next presidential election, of course, once there's one election out of the way, the next one is always happening. And the fact is that so many of the Democrats in the House and Senate are already looking at a presidential run. And the fact that Robert Mueller may be, getting even closer and closer to the president and the folks who helped elect him in 2016. I mean, his staff as well as perhaps the Russians. Mm. So it's not going to be an easy task. So for all the things that the Democrats would love to get accomplished, and they have a very large laundry list, of voting rights and an ending of gerrymandering making sure that presidential candidates release their tax forms. Well, it's nice to have an agenda in the House, but when you have Mitch McConnell standing in the way in the Senate, it'll be very interesting to see if anything gets through the House and Senate and onto the president's desk. But at least the Democrats will try to offer an alternative to what we've been seeing for the past 2 years and push through legislation that the American people can support.
Before we get too far away from the government shutdown conversation, just a quick question that I think you can give a quick answer to. But is this discussion of the wall and border control becoming now a metaphor, as we heard references to over the weekend, or is it literal? Are we seeing the conversation change as of today?
I don't think we are, but I think it's very fair to say that it is both a real wall, a big, beautiful wall, as the president likes to talk about, but it is a metaphor for basically, the fact that the president is blaming the Democrats for the deaths of two immigrant children who tried to come into the country, the fact that the president goes to Iraq and attacks Democrats for not building the wall, could you imagine? This was a Christmas message to U.S. troops in Iraq. Could you imagine Lyndon Johnson going to Vietnam and attacking Eugene McCarthy or attacking Republicans over his Vietnam policy? So a lot of it is a metaphor for, so-called weakness on security and borders that Trump thinks the Democrats are responsible for. But at the same time, he is still insisting on a $5 billion wall. And that seems pretty real to me.
You're listening to Ken Rudin, the political junkie. And you kind of segued nicely for me into this op-ed that Mitt Romney published. Now, people might remember him, of course, as the Republican nominee in 2012. He is the senator-elect now from Utah. Before he gets to Capitol Hill, this op-ed is published. The very first sentence reads, "The Trump presidency made a deep descent in December." And it goes from
well,
there.
Know, so this is pretty remarkable. Let's not forget that Mitt Romney's niece is Ronna McDaniel, who happens to be the chair of the Republican National Committee.
Yeah.
But given the fact that we no longer will have John McCain and Jeff Flake and Bob Corker and other quasi-independent, I say quasi because they didn't always match their words with their actions, but the fact that he is coming in, even before he comes in, he's putting President Trump on notice that his tactics and his behavior are unacceptable. My goodness, I mean, you know, I mean, Mitt Romney's a fascinating guy. We knew in 2016 he disparaged President Trump on many, many occasions, and yet he was clearly campaigning to be Secretary of State in the Trump presidency in 2017. So I don't know what to make of Mitt Romney. I think I think he's going to be a very fascinating character, person to watch in the new Congress, especially, as I said, with McCain and Flake and Corker gone.
So that's interesting, Ken. I think you were just suggesting that in the absence of some of the other iconic Republicans that have been part of the contemporary Republican Party, he's staking a claim to stepping in and being one of those center stage people, but not in alignment with fully in alignment with the president. He does write in this op-ed, it is not that all of the president's policies have been misguided. He goes on to say, but policies and appointments are only a part of the presidency. And then he adds that he will support policies that he believes are in the best interest of the country and his state, and he's going to oppose those that are not.
Well, see, that I think that explores and kind of illustrates the two different Donald Trumps. I mean, look, Mitt Romney is very happy with the president's conservative policies. He loves the fact that there have been conservative judges confirmed by the Senate. He loves the fact that it's a more muscular foreign policy. He loves the thought of a tax cut that may not have benefited everybody and may have increased the debt, shall we say, by a lot of money. But these are policies that Mitt Romney and other conservatives like. What Romney doesn't like and has made clear is Trump's tendency to ignore facts, to perhaps even lie. People are afraid to use that word, but I think lie is a fair word given the fact that so much of what the president said is clearly not true. And the fact that he's so divisive and just rips apart, you know, I mean, the fact that he recently, as I said, you know, he went to Iraq and attacked Democrats. He attacked General McChrystal. What do you call him? He called him somebody who opens up his big dumb mouth, and he's a Hillary lover. I mean, this is what the president does that drives Republican nuts. But unlike Mitt Romney, most of these Republicans will keep their big mouths shut. Mitt Romney doesn't look like he's going to do that. It'd be very fascinating to watch the role Mitt Romney plays in our body politics and in the new Senate.
Part of the president's response to that op-ed was that he said he would have preferred that Mitt Romney focus on border security, and then he added a quip, I won big, he didn't. Hey,
yeah,
Ken.
Yeah, well, let's for the record, let's point out that Mitt Romney got 47% of the vote in 2012, and Trump got 46% of the vote. But in all fairness, Trump is president, and Mitt Romney didn't win. But again, you know, this is not all about Donald Trump. He has to realize that his majority in the Senate may have increased, but it's gone completely in the House. And again, as I say, as Mueller gets closer, as maybe some Republicans talk about more being more and more independent, and more people, fewer and fewer people are starting to believe what the president keeps talking about with his claims. This could be a very challenging, this sounds like but this is going to be a very challenging year for the president. And you know that when the president is challenged, he gets more and more erratic with more and more lashing out. So, you know, I'd love to say that I move into a new year with more and more optimism every year, but it's harder and harder to do it with these kind of politics.
Elizabeth Warren says she's going to jump into the race, hitting the campaign trail in Iowa. And her quote was, I'm in this fight all the way. And the president's response to that was, Well, I guess he was asked, do you think Elizabeth Warren believes she can win? And he said, I don't know. You'll have to ask her psychiatrist. So you can tell what's happening there already.
Elizabeth Warren, of course, has been sparring with President Trump, I think, from day one. And she should expect, and she does expect, the fact that the president is going to lash out at everything he does, everything from Pocahontas to DNA tests to everything else. But, of course, Elizabeth Warren is not going to have the field to herself. Kamala Harris and Cory Booker and Kirsten Gillibrand are other senators who are probably going to announce in the next couple of weeks. We don't know about Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota and Sherrod Brown of Ohio. Other senators, there's a score of former governors who are probably going to run. Bernie Sanders is likely to run. Joe Biden, we're all watching to see what he does.
What do you think there, Ken? What do you think about Joe Biden? Do you think Joe Biden will jump in?
I don't know. He's talking like a candidate. Of course, he's 76 years old. I don't know what that means anymore. I think there's more and more of a, you know, when you saw what happened and who was elected in 2018, you think there's more of a demand for younger candidates and perhaps more representation of the new demographics.
Are you
women
saying no?
And minorities and things like that.
Is this a no? Are these your reasons why you don't
No, but it's not a no because, I mean, I think the only reason he didn't run in 2016 is one, Hillary Clinton seemed to have this big lead,
yeah,
and of course the death of his son,
exactly,
Beau, but now I'm hearing people talk about, well, maybe have Joe Biden team up with Beto O'Rourke, announce that early, and, you know, because there's going to be at least maybe 30 Democrats. You talked about, remember in 2016, we couldn't get enough all the Republicans on one debate stage,
right,
because it was such a big giant field. We're talking about maybe 30 candidates. I mean, I don't know how viable they all
are.
Yeah,
and I do think Joe Biden jumping in would eliminate quite a number of those candidates.
I'm not convinced of that. I mean, the fact is that, yes, he has name recognition, and yes, he's beloved he was in the Senate for like 175 years, two terms as the loyal vice president. But I don't, has his time, you know, come and gone? I don't know. Mm. Is the Democratic electorate more impatient and more activist? I don't know. But boy, it's going to be some wild ride in 2019 for presidential politics.
All right, Ken, 2018 is in the rear view mirror. Give me your top two impactful political events. What stood out, number one and number two, for you in the year behind us?
There are so many things I can.
I know you only get two.
I only get two. Okay. I'll talk quickly. I think the two things that hit me the most, I think, were the Brett Kavanaugh hearings. Mm-hmm. And I think, given the fact of the Me Too movement and what women have gone through, the fact that the Senate voted for a nominee who may have behaved untoward towards Christine Blasey Ford, who went through all this, you know, great expense to her own personal life to testify against him. I think that said a lot about what's going on in this country, about the difference between men and women, and how women are still not believed. They keep saying, oh, women should come forward and talk about what happened. But even when women do, they're still ridiculed by the president of the United States. So to me, the Kavanaugh hearing was gigantic. And of course, boy, there's so many more things. I would also say the election,
right,
given the fact that for 2 years, the president seems to have had his way with Congress, with the Devin Nunes's and the Paul Ryans of the world. And that's much different than the Adam Schiff's and the Nancy Pelosi's of the world Trump will now face with Democratic control of the House. So that's big, too.
Okay. I know if you had a third, you would put the Helsinki summit on the list and step into the whole Robert Mueller investigation. So I'm kind of giving.
Can I just say one thing? And I would, you know what? I would also put on the loss, the death of George Bush and John,
yes,
McCain, because even though they were both imperfect people, they represented a civility and decency that we will rue the day that we've lost. So I think those losses are big as well.
Imperfect people, huh? Isn't that a description for every single person on this planet? Well,
I know, and yet we will miss them because they believe in something that is dwindling in our politics today that really just touches me breaks my heart that for somebody who loves politics as much as I do, to see that lack of civility for the past, not just 2 years, but it's been growing for far more than 2 years, and it's very disheartening.
Well, I don't want to kick off a new year with a tone of being sad or morose. However, let's just say, Ken, that there is going to be an awful lot unfolding ahead of us that we can't even predict or expect right now. We'll be here to talk about it throughout the year, but who knows what's to come.
And the fact that we'll be here every week, that's what makes America great, don't you think?
Well, it certainly makes Cap Radio great. All right. Thanks a lot, Ken. Happy New Year. We will talk to you next week when we'll be talking about the inauguration of a brand new governor in California whose name is not Jerry Brown.
I can't believe Jerry Brown is leaving us. Beth, Happy New Year to you and to all the listeners.
That is Ken Rudin, the political junkie, and you are listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. Listening to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Two new laws taking effect in this new year in California extend services for people who are transgender or non-binary. One law adds an option beyond male or female on state-issued IDs. The other law involves gender-affirming health care for kids who are in the foster care system. In the studio with me is Pixie Pearl from the Sacramento LGBT Community Center. Pixie works on these issues and works with young LGBT people who are experiencing homelessness. Hello. Happy New Year.
Good morning.
Glad to have you here. So I think we should go through each of these changes in some detail. Let's start with the state-issued ID change. This was SB Senate Bill 179.
Yes, absolutely. So this was actually the Gender Recognition Act that passed in 2017, and it actually had a couple of stages that happened. So on January 1st of 2018, so this past year, folks were allowed to amend their birth certificate, so place male, female, or X for non-binary on their birth certificate. And it could also, folks that wanted their babies that were born at that time were also allowed to place that on their new birth certificate. Then in September 1st, they allowed the gender-ordered court change that allows anything, documents to be changed or to be able to identify that way as well. And then now, starting yesterday, you are allowed to change your driver's license to have male, female, or X for non-binary.
Is this changing the process as well as the options then?
It is. So it's actually, you do not no longer need a doctor's approval to justify you being able to change your documents.
But do you need to present that birth certificate or some other form of ID in any other way that it somehow affects making the choice?
Not for the driver's license, okay. No, and neither for the birth certificate either.
I've seen an estimate of perhaps 55,000 people in California this could affect. What's your view?
So I actually identify as genderqueer, and I actually have a couple of my friends that were actually going to go together and do this. I actually think that while there might be some opinions that go elsewhere that this might change too much, that I think it allows some affirmation of like who you are and that I'm beyond like this. These two do not represent me, and that at least on a document or my driver's license that I'm going to see every day or I have to show someone, this is going to represent me, and that I don't need a doctor to say to justify who I am or, you know, who other folks are, and that this one thing is going to change a lot.
Is there an aspect involved here in that you can get a driver's license at age 16 and there are some healthcare issues that don't kick in until age 18 in the state of California for gender-related healthcare?
I mean, I think it's one way to look at it in the sense of at accessing medical health care. But I think that just in the social aspect or legal aspect, I think this is really needed because there's studies that show that gender identity is formed at by age four. So I know that, you know, there isn't necessarily identity documents at that time, but I think being able to access this and have this is the first step, because we know that mental health or trauma happens at younger ages. And I think that it shouldn't have anything to do with being able to access your identity documents.
I think you've addressed in somewhat of a personal issue what mm-hmm. this means in telling the story of you and your friends. Can you speak more to the bigger impact, not only for people in California, but in terms of the rest of the country in the state taking this step?
Yeah, absolutely. I know that we're, you know, the second state to do so. You know, Oregon was first. I think that it's showing that we're moving beyond the binary, or at least acknowledging it. I think there are things to think about, and the fact of this is just two states that are doing it, and we're talking about California doing it now, but that it only applies to what to California. So birth certificates, if you were born here, the driver's license here, but you can't, you know, passports are still only going to say male or female. And not everybody technically around the world is going to have training. So I think that it opens up room for discussion, for training, for movement forward that hopefully other states will follow, and that, or that we can just have, you know, a federal approach to this.
Not only training, but questions, conversation, maybe even judgment, Pixie, because say you're from California and down on the bottom of your driver's license where it says gender or sex might be the way the question is asked, mm-hmm. there's an X. Mm-hmm. You go to another state, for example, to rent a car, and someone says, what's this X down here? And thus begins a conversation.
Right, absolutely. I mean, I think that conversation can already be had or be instigated by presentation, right? By gender presentation through representing your identity. And so I think, you know, safety has always been a conversation and concern that can come up, right? Because the conversation might not always be positive. Right. But I think that I don't want fear to hold that back. But I'm willing to have those discussions because for me, the affirmation allows me to move throughout the world in a more safe way. And so I'm hoping that offers it to others as well.
You are a professional working with so many different levels of homelessness, needs, resources, age groups. Mm-hmm. When I just asked you about perceptions outside the state, I'm going to share for the benefit of the audience that isn't seeing, you almost got teary-eyed. There was some big cloud that passed over you. Will you tell me what else that meant when I raised that scenario?
Absolutely. So I'm actually originally from Texas, and I'm the house manager of our transitional living program. So we've got youth 18 to 24 that were experiencing homelessness for some reason and needed housing, needed, you know, more support. And I just think about if we have violence and discrimination coming from families and youth just seeking affirmation of who they are, and that's just from families, what's coming from government, what's coming from other states and people, and just knowing that, you know, I'm only able to create safety for these youth in small ways, that I think recognition and acknowledgement of who they are is the first step. And I hope that that continues to happen.
Because you're using that word safety, mm-hmm. let me reflect on October or so of this past year when there was a signal from the Trump administration that maybe transgender would no longer be a definition, or maybe some of the movement that's happened on these issues could be rolled back. And there was a lot of discussion at that time about how much in fear people in the expanded LGBT and beyond community are living. Where is that fear level as we go into a new year? And in California, we're moving into a new administration under a new governor, Gavin Newsom.
Right. I think that the fear is still there. I think that folks have, you know, chosen to, you know, kind of jump on that front of like, we're going to fight, we're going to advocate, we're going to move to continue. And there's others, I think, that have, you know, rescinded, kind of, you know, taking shelter as they can. And I'm concerned, you know, I think, you know, trans women, trans men, but specifically trans women of color and trans girls of color, you know, are seeing the most violence, you know, the murders, and, you know, also we see suicides, and sorry for that heavy content, has increased, and there are higher rates in the trans and gender nonconforming community, as well as the larger LGBT community. And I think that that's still prevalent, and it still needs to be addressed So I think it's still there.
You're listening to Pixie Pearl from the Sacramento LGBT Community Center. She, they are the TLP house manager. I just corrected myself here. So I'm going to say that beginning in this conversation, I could have asked you, what pronoun do you prefer? That would have been appropriate.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
So let me handle that the proper way now. What pronoun do you prefer?
So I use they, them, their pronouns.
Okay. So I stand corrected on that. I do want to talk about the other law that we mentioned, which is AB 2119, and this applies to healthcare for children and teenagers in the foster care system. Will you explain the change that's happening?
Absolutely. So now there's a direct access for gender-affirming health and behavioral health care for foster youth in the system. And so basically it's saying that if requested or identified through the foster youth, they now can get care that respects their gender identity. So that can look like hormones, that can look like a therapist that is LGBT affirming, also anything that will help them align with their gender identity, address, you know, gender dysphoria symptoms, and then it also includes gender identity within the Foster Youth Bill of Rights.
And those changes are supposed to take effect immediately, but there again, there's a learning curve throughout the healthcare system that could take even years.
Right, absolutely. Actually, the Department of Social Services has until January of 2020 to actually put that into their regulations.
Pixie, I feel like I'm going to move through yet another year of stumbling at times through learning and understanding how to have the right kind of conversations, how to open the doors for some understanding and learning. Where do you think the bigger community, and maybe California's ahead of the country in a lot of ways, but where do you think we collectively are in understanding and making changes in the issues that most concern your life and the clientele you work with?
I mean, I think we're headed in the right direction. I think we still have a lot of room to go. And there's that piece of cultural humility, you know, kind of like when you're introducing me and you're saying you said the wrong pronoun and you immediately corrected yourself. And then we kind of started over that. I think that's all that, you know, the community is asking is, you know, there is no expectation that everybody knows everything. But it's like come with it with some humble, like, humility and know that you're not going to know everything and be willing to learn more. And I hope and I see that with this legislation passing that we're moving in that direction. But my concern is always implementation. We can have as many bills, but if we have no oversight in looking, are these bills being implemented? Is this legislation actually happening? I think that that's where it can get lost in making sure that nobody falls through those cracks.
With a new governor coming in, what issues do you expect to get more attention or different attention?
I'm hoping that mental health is being addressed and all of that intersectionality that comes with that, right? Whether, you know, race and trauma and foster youth, right? So I'm just hoping that mental health and also like homelessness gets addressed.
The new governor is a Democrat. And the Senate will be led by Democrats. There's a majority in the Assembly, too. So there will be issues that get traction, perhaps in this era, that might not have otherwise. It also might set up more conflict with the federal government. How politically involved are you able to be as an organization? How big a voice do you have in California lawmaking?
You know, I think it's kind of a middle ground. You know, we can't directly support folks that are running, but I know that we can put in letters of support or encouragement to lawmakers and ask, you know, for their support in passing. You know, I know that we put in a letter for the SB 179 and also the 2119 and hoping that there is support. But I know that there isn't much beyond that that we're able to do other than the direct service and access in that way.
Well, let's leave with a couple action points then. If someone is hearing this conversation and wants to make the change on the driver's license, how do you do that? Where does that begin?
So there actually should be a new form. So you shouldn't need anything else other than going to the DMV and being able to fill out the new form and marking X on the form.
Even if your current driver's license is still good, not expired, and just go to the DMV or make the appointment and find out. What about in the foster care system? What might parents need to know?
I think, again, that cultural humility, being open, knowing that if a youth is saying, I might be trans, or I'm having some thoughts, or I am trans, or I'm nonconforming, I'm genderqueer, is what does that mean to you? How can I support you? And then allowing that there is access to those services now.
And then going forward in the new year, what is it that you're paying attention to that I might not have brought up or asked about in this conversation? I guess that's another way of saying, what else in this moment do we need to know?
I think that just, we're all focusing on the positive and the new year and starting new, and that we see a lot of, mental health crises that are happening and homelessness. And I think that those shouldn't go on the undercurrent just with movement forward and all this positive, is that folks are still struggling and that there are organizations trying to help, but there's not enough places or service providers or money going around to be able to continue those efforts.
Hand in hand with that, I will add that the Sacramento Continuum of Care Homeless Youth Task Force has right now the SAC 100-Day Challenge. There is an effort to house more than 200 homeless young people before March 6th. As of right before Christmas, 85 young people had been housed. That means the goal is still bigger than the success at this point. And just in terms of estimates, what do you see as the homeless young people population in the Sacramento area?
I know that we have a large amount of, I know that we see at least 200 youth, within a month and sometimes ongoing. So I think, over a couple thousand.
Pixie, thank you. It's a good conversation to start the new year. We're going to post a few links. We'll post a link to the Sacramento LGBT Community Center. Also, we have a lot on not only the two new laws that we talked about, but more new laws taking effect in California. You can find those at capradio.org/newlaws. And again, Happy New Year. I hope it is in many ways.
Happy New Year to you as well.
That is Pixie Pearl, and this is Insight on Cap Radio. Listening to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. The Broadway musical Waitress is on stage at the Sacramento Community Center Theater through Saturday. Note, there is no Sunday show through Saturday, January 5th. But if you think you can handle some of the show's choreography, you can join Colby Kendall from the touring cast in a master dance class this Friday. Colby's in the studio to talk more about this and about the show. Hi there.
Hello.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Glad
Thank
to have you.
You
here. Also here is Gina Smith. She is Director of Education at Broadway Sacramento. She's helped organize this master class. Welcome. Happy New Year to you too, Gina.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you.
All right, Colby, how's the Sacramento audience for the show?
Oh, they're great. They're great, and it's around the holidays where everyone's feeling joyful and enthusiastic, so it's nice.
Some people might know the story Waitress from the film. They might know it has a lot of delicious pies and a lot of good music.
Yes.
And Sarah Bareilles' music in it.
Of course.
But say more about the storyline.
Oh, well, it's about three waitresses, but they focus on one named Jenna. And it's about friendship, and I don't want to give too much away, but it's about friendship and three women who are put in positions where they have to choose happiness for themselves and their journey through that.
Trying to change their mm-hmm. lives. I think it's a great theme at the new year.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
It's all that optimism that we're full of. So talk about your dancing in the show. And because you're in the ensemble, you sing too.
Mm-hmm.
But your featured talent is
yes.
your dancing.
Yes. Well, what I love about this show is the movement vocabulary is what I like to say, because it's there's not like a huge dance numbers, but what is so great about the show, it's the set, the acting, the scenes, it's all choreographed and it's moving in like a dreamy way. So I love that I'm able to kind of be a part of that and have a very fun movement vocabulary.
Have you had the experience of being hired because you're an actor who can dance versus being hired because you're a dancer who can act?
Well, I mean, I guess that's I say, well, I have my degree in musical theater because you do have to do all three.
Yeah.
And so there has been times where it's like, oh, well, he acts well. Can he dance it? And then they're like, well, we like his dancing. We just hope he can sing it, you know.
Yeah.
So I try to do all three well. But there's, you know, there's one that I like more than the other sometimes. You know?
And for this show, how would you define that?
Definitely singer, singer actor who's able to move very well and also cover other leads in the show.
Give people a little bit of your background. Dreamgirls, the role was?
Marty.
Marty.
Mm-hmm.
And you were the understudy for Cogsworth in Disney's
Beauty and the Beast. Yeah.
And then Sister Act.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You had a great role. Or have a great role. Is it have or had?
Well, had. Yeah.
Had. Okay.
I was with that show for about a year here and then a couple of months in Japan. And I played the villain, so it was very different than what I was used to.
In this show, is the tour defined? So are you already looking ahead to where your next either role or tour or audition segment will be?
Yeah. I mean, this tour is scheduled through August of next year.
Okay.
And we're hitting a lot of cities in a very short amount of time. So
Gina,
yes.
Here you are in Sacramento, and you're able to have Colby come in and teach students. What's the goal in presenting a masterclass?
Well, I'm always looking for, depending on the show, any kind of educational opportunities that we can bring in. And so I was super excited. As Colby said, the whole show is choreographed. It's the movement is spectacular, mm-hmm. but it's not what you would consider a dance show. So I'm always looking for different classes that we can do so that students have an opportunity to learn some dance from the different shows that come through. So
I want to make sure I talk appropriately about who this class would be for, because I'm calling it more advanced. You're calling it a master class. Colby, who would this class Friday morning be just right for?
For everyone, honestly. Whenever I try to teach a class, I try to make it to where everyone feels like they can learn it on their level. The movement might be a little tricky for some, but it's all fun and it's all everyone learn at their own pace.
You're listening to Colby Kindle. He is from the touring Broadway production Waitress, which continues at the Sacramento Community Center Theater through January 5th. So this class is Friday from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. And 10 a.m. is early for nighttime theater people.
Right.
Musicians, dancers of all kind. But there will be a warm-up,
there
right?
There will be a warm-up for me and for them.
All right. What else about the class, Gina? Location and how to register?
So the location is the Sierra 2, and you can register online going to our website, clicking on our Academy page and register right online. Or you can give us a call or email me. So
we will post a link to Broadway Sacramento Academy, and the Sierra 2 studio is at 2791 24th Street, Sacramento. When you bring a show town to town, it can be a bit of a blur, I'd imagine. Certain things stand out. I was looking at your past. Have you come through Sacramento before? Do you know this area much?
Yes, I know it very well. Actually, I was here around this time last year, with a show called The Book of Mormon.
You were in The Book of Mormon?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Why didn't I see that? I didn't know that.
Yeah,
Sorry about that.
We were here for 2 weeks, and I fell in love with this area and this city. And I'm not just saying that because I'm here. I really, really enjoy Sacramento a lot.
Oh, good.
And I remember it, and I speak fondly of it when I'm not here. So it's been great to come back in such a short amount of time.
What's the learning curve in a new show? How much time do you have to rehearse and prepare before that first performance?
Well, in my case, I was a replacement. So I usually have 2 to 3 weeks to learn the role and get into the show because that person is moving on to something else. So it's pretty quick.
How did this happen between the two of you? Gina, how did you find out that Colby was willing to teach and then make the connection?
Well, we put in a request to the touring company, and I love it when they give us somebody like Colby. So when they gave us Colby's name, and I Googled and checked out what he had taught, I was super excited.
it's got such a variety of types of shows. So being able to talk to that, especially in the Q&A after, there'll be a Q&A with the kids after. I call them kids, but they're adults.
Any ages. Yeah.
All ages, yeah.
But to do a show like Beauty and the Beast, Book of Mormon, Waitress, it's a variety of dancing styles. And to be able to impart that information to the students is fantastic.
You are saying adults or ages 12 and up.
12 and
correct?
Up.
12 and up, yes.
Okay. All right. And there is a fee for the class, so you can find all that on the website. I think we have a little bit of music from Waitress, so let's get you in the spirit.
The day starts like the rest I've seen, another carbon copy of where I've already been. Days keep coming, one out, one in, they keep coming. I don't know what I wish I had, but there's no time now for thinking things like that. I've got too much to do,
too much to do.
We've got too much to do, too much to do. Opening up, letting the day.
Jesse Mueller is in the title role of Jenna. How big is the whole group? How big is your cast?
Well, it's, I would say on stage every night, it's about 13 to 15.
Mm-hmm. How do you do it coming into town? I know sometimes for different shows, we've interfaced with actors who are looking for a place to stay or trying to figure out how to navigate. You're on your own for that, aren't you?
Well, no, we have a company manager who's great about making sure we aren't sleeping on the streets when we come in to a city. But we try to do Airbnbs, hotels. I mean, I enjoy an Airbnb because it kind of gives you a taste of the city and you have a kitchen. You can kind of cook and relax and feel like you're at home while you're on the road. So it's nice.
What else did you do during your last 2-week stretch here? So what did you want to do or explore this time? And do you have time to do that?
I mean, considering it's been the holidays and it's been pretty busy that way. But since I've been to the city before, I was able to revisit a lot of the places that I enjoy a lot. And I just love, like I was saying, I love the downtown area. And I've been able to get out and, you know, with the time I have, get out and try to see everything and hear some of the music and stuff in the city. It's nice.
Well, theater and musical theater is such a cornerstone of this community. Gina, will you talk about a few more of the options for people looking to try something in the new year or get their kids involved in the new year, what the span of opportunities are?
Well, we have a lot of shows coming up, and I think actually a family-friendly show, super family-friendly, Stomp, is next coming up for us. But we're going to have pretty quickly here audition workshops because we're getting ready for Music Circus in the summer, and we have some shows there. So we have audition workshops coming up. We have summer camps. I did want to talk a little bit about with this show, Waitress. We do have an audio described performance on Saturday for our blind patrons. So, and we'll have a tactile before that. So there are lots of all kinds of different things that we do around the shows, education and outreach wise.
Is that something necessary to register or connect with in advance?
The tactile, absolutely. Yeah. Just to let us know, because that does happen before the house really opens. So our blind patrons can come in early, and the costume supervisor will bring some of the pieces from the show out so that they can feel them. And then the audio described is a live description of the visual elements of the show.
Okay.
And we do those for Saturday matinees.
That's Gina Smith with the Broadway Sacramento Academy. And a little bit more from Colby Kindle. What is next? Where might we see you next? Do you know yet?
I don't know yet. That's the beauty of being an actor. But what I will say is I just love that being with this show, I'm able to, you know, tour around the country and just kind of live in that moment and enjoy that. And then when something comes up next, you just then you focus on that. But I'm really loving my time here right now.
Well, there are a lot of people that love that you said you love Sacramento downtown. And considering you've just experienced it in the last 2-3 years or so, it is a much changing and much growing downtown area.
It's
so
nice.
Well, good luck in the finale of the show, in this launch into the new year. I'm glad you took a few minutes to join us
today.
Thanks
for having me.
Yeah, did you make a New Year's resolution?
No. I learned that lesson a long time ago.
Can't keep it, right? Yeah, you're in that category?
Just try your best.
I know. Just try your best. I know that one. How about you, Gina? Anything for the new year?
I make the same ones every year. Read more books. See more movies. So those are my two.
Yeah. I'll take those. Same thing.
Okay. Well, you can meet Colby and actually learn from him at the masterclass Friday, January 4th, 10 a.m. to 11:30. It's at Sierra 2, which is on 24th Street in Sacramento. And we will post a link with more information. Waitress continues through January 5th at the Community Center Theater. Thanks again.
Thank you so much.
And that's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruyak. Sounds like we're going to close with a little bit of music for you. Our producers are Cody Drabble and Bert Johnson. Our technical director is Mark Jones. Insight's executive producer is Joe Barr. Thanks for joining us.
Days like these, we can only do the best we can and do it all again. It's the heartbeat, the center, the lifeline. You enter. It's the heartbeat, center, the lifeline. You enter. It's the heartbeat, center, the lifeline. You enter. Open it up, let me.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.